I'm ready.
Let's do it.
What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Let's pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Who does the lolly?
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny. What are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back.
Chow down.
Have some sips and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
Too long I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hello everybody. Welcome back to The Mouse and Castle. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. Come on in. So glad you've joined us for some Disney conversation. This is episode 18. Got a lot to talk about. Aladdin just came out. We're going to give our review of it. And, just a few more details on Galaxy's Edge, and I had my own encounter with the world of Walt Disney. I'm going to tell you all about it, but before we get there, let's bring him in. My co-host for the program, Mr. Aaron Goins. How's it going, Aaron?
Pretty good, Riley Blanton. How are you doing?
Ooh, both. Very formal, I see. Monsieur Aaron Goins, welcome to the podcast. This is your host, Jonathan Glenn Riley Blanton. Now you know all four of my names. This is the only podcast I've ever said all four names. Fun fact.
Wow. Glenn Riley Blanton.
All four of them. Yep.
So wait, what that be? J-G-R-B? Yep.
Yep, that's me.
J-G-R-B?
Jerb. It doesn't
New
work.
New nickname.
On second thought, let's... thing. Yeah, man, it's been a hot second. I've been in the middle of moving, so I'm actually back in my hometown of Atlanta, Georgia, as we record, and just excited to talk some Disney, man.
All the way in Atlanta, but you were just in San Francisco, right?
I was. In fact, one could say I left my heart. All right, it's a terrible joke. I was visiting my sister. We had a little Memorial Day weekend trip out there that I was doing right before I moved to my next Air Force duty assignment. So I had a nice little few day break. And by break, it wasn't really a break. It was like I landed. We did a road trip up Highway 1 on the coast, and I was in the back seat. It kind of sucked. It's a lot of twists and turns on that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, depending on how you are with motion sickness, sitting in the back seat.
I'm pretty good, but that was like, it was every bit of 7 hours. But we got to see the Ewok land. We got to see Endor. You know what? I'll post some pictures. I know we'll be doing, obviously, on the Star Wars podcast stuff, but I'll post it. You know, it's all in the same umbrella now. I'll post a couple pictures from that we took at the Redwood Forest. Even went to one of the filming locations for Return of the Jedi. Although, sadly, I really thought there would be more. There's really only one or two locations left that were actually actively used for filming of Return of the Jedi. All the other ones are kind of defunct, which is kind of a shame.
Any crash speeder bikes?
That was the location. I'll post that photo very soon. But there's the one shot of the crashed speeder bike, the scout trooper, on the fallen over tree. Where one dude kind of navigates underneath it, and the other dude goes kersplat. We went there, took photos, took a bunch of drone footage, because that's what I do, because I'm a nerd. And like that was one location. And then the other one is the highway near the Avenue of Giants, for people who are local that you know that. But basically, that was where they did like the side profile shots on the back of a truck. But the actual like indoor forest, sorry guys, this is a lot of Star Wars nerdery at the top of the Disney podcast, but it happens. Sorry. Not sorry.
It's technically Disney now,
right? That's what
I give it a few minutes.
I'm reaching. We'll get to Aladdin in just a second. All right. It's like, come on, talk about this. No. So those are like the only two spots that are on like active park public land. All the Ewok village and all of those scenes were shot, like the encounter with Wicket. And all of those were shot on private lumbering land, which has all long since been lumbered. Is that a word? Past tense of lumbering? logged. That's the word I'm looking for. It's long gone, basically. So You can't visit any of those spots, but it's close enough. I mean, everything up there, it's kind of like stepping around in the world of Endor. Or if you've played Battlefront 2 like I have, it's basically like walking around in the video game. Yes, I also appreciated the natural beauty of nature, but also Star Wars. So that was my weekend. But that wasn't the only... there's a much more Disney-ish thing that I did, and that was going to the special exhibit that the Walt Disney Family Museum is putting on in San Francisco. This is at the Presidio, not but a 5-minute walk from Lucasfilm. You've been there, Aaron, many times. It's my first time.
Lucasfilm?
Yeah.
I've been to Lucasfilm, but, you know, I sadly never made my way over to that Disney museum, which I'm kind of...
Well, so this is
why.
A special... I don't know where the whole museum is. This is a special exhibit that they have. Oh, it's an exhibition hall they have, but I think they use it for different things. But right now they have a special exhibition that's called Mickey Mouse from Walt to the World. And it's basically, and this is straight from their website, a celebration of animation's most recognizable character. It's an original exhibit that chronicles Mickey's influence on art and entertainment from the past 9 decades. Of course, this past year being the 90th anniversary of Mickey Mouse. It was curated by these famous curators who I don't know who they are. And they have all kinds of cool and exclusive. Yeah, I'm sure they are. They're right here on the website. It was interesting because we got there like an hour before they closed, so I could have really honestly spent like 3-4 hours easily and not blinked. So didn't really get to sit through as much detail as I would like. But it really it chronicled a lot of things, and I thought probably the most interesting thing was I'll let the Disney Channel, not the TV one, the YouTube one. I'll let them talk about it because there's a lot of interesting things, but the one that kind of jumped out to me the most had to do with Walt's original drawings.
At some point, but he's very, very big. He really allows Walt to go on and continue with all the great projects we know from later on. One of our prime artifacts here at the Walt Disney Family Museum, we have the original no drawings of Mickey Mouse, and they're on display. And you see the red background there. It's mounted drawings, and you can see they've circled a couple of the designs they like best. And if you look closely in the bottom right-hand corner, you even might see Minnie Mouse in there, showing she was born right around the same time.
So they have these original pencil drawings of Mickey Mouse that... We've all seen them in documentaries and on display. Some of the just original. I remember I got to, I think it was Life magazine did a 90th anniversary profile of Mickey Mouse that I picked up a couple months ago, and I remember seeing those drawings, but actually seeing the originals in person was actually really cool. That was probably one of my favorite things there.
That's amazing. Yeah. So is this like an exhibit that you kind of knew was happening and you planned to go to, or did you just
I had no idea.
Happen to be in the city and stumble
no,
upon
I wanted
it?
No, I wanted to go to the Yoda fountain. That was my motivation. Then I was like, wait a second. I was literally on Google Maps. Sometimes they display events or things that are relevant to you or like restaurants that you would likely enjoy because Google's a master robot who understands your every dreams and desire. It's kind of scary, but it was right because right there highlighted on Google Maps is I was like, you know, because we were going to Pier 39, kind of having the San Francisco experience. So we saw the seals there. They were really cute. Then we went to the Ghirardelli.
Sounds right to me.
One of the two.
Yep.
Always forget which one it is. I think it's Ghirardelli. Email us, mousecastle@gmail.com. But we went to got some chocolate there. It was great. And that's like just about a mile from the Presidio and Lucasfilm. And I was just looking. I was like, wait a second. There's a Walt Disney. Hey, I should go to that. And not only that, I didn't even know this when we showed up. There's like, yeah, show your ID to purchase a ticket. And I do. And I show my military ID. And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's free. And they weren't advertising that at all. But they just let me and all my... Air Force friends just go do the exhibit for free. So good on you. Appreciate it.
That is a great find.
I
saw you posting pictures and I was like, when was Riley going to go do this? I never even knew you were going there.
No, I didn't until a couple hours before. So I posted, this is why you should be following @MouseAndCastle on Instagram. I posted a ton of things on our Instagram story And yes. You know, I'll go back and put that in a highlight so that if you guys are listening to the podcast right now, you can go to our Instagram profile and you can see like a highlight reel of it, because it really was amazing. Like one of my other favorite things, just kind of off the top of my head, they had a film on Fantasia. And again, I'm if you're listening to this podcast, the likelihood is you're probably a more knowledgeable on Disney history than I am. I am no expert in the subject matter. So a lot of this stuff was new to me, the history of Fantasia and the idea of this feature-length kind of abstract art. Would it be successful? And the idea of a feature-length animated film, period, with Snow White. Was it going to work? And how they poured so many of the studio's assets into this, really sparing no expense, risking the success on the idea of a feature-length animated movie. Who would see a feature-length cartoon? That's for like a serial before the show. Why would you spend all of your money on a ticket that's just an animated movie? And so like they had a whole display, a lot of artwork, maquettes from some of the early Disney films, and it just kind of chronicles the life of Walt and the evolution of the studio and films, all the way up to probably my favorite room was the parks. And it's just gorgeously done. It's not just like a series of rooms with pictures and videos. It's just a really well curated, interactive. They have a bunch of different stations with audio where you just put on headphones and can listen to like some clips of old shareholder meetings and Walt Disney addressing the board at one point, and the animation strike and how that happened. Just a lot of Disney history that, like, especially as someone who's not super familiar with it, I could have stayed for hours and hours and just appreciate it all.
That sounds amazing. That I love museums. And I think, like you were describing, you're seeing these sketches that we've all seen before, but the fact that you're, like, literally standing right there
yeah.
in the same room as it, it has a whole different feel to it. So, yeah. I'm yeah. slightly jealous
Aww.
That you had this experience, but...
Yeah.
I'll have to see next time I'm out there. I know that museum is out there. I'm sure that exhibit is probably only, only there
for
a limited amount of time.
Yeah, you've got some time. You have through, I think it's January next year. It's through early 2020. It only just opened back in April. So you've got some time. So the next time you're in San Francisco, man, especially if it's for, if you're going to Lucasfilm anyway, which I know you typically do a few times a year, or just on weekends when you feel like it, just if you want.
All right.
No, I wish. We all wish. But no, seriously, like it's a really, really cool exhibit. They have this incredible, I honestly don't know. I think it's the Disneyland model, like the one that you see Walt talking on in front of on. It's this.
Oh.
It's like it's if not, it's
I
a
saw,
replica.
I saw. I think you posted a picture or video or something of
yeah.
that, and I was just like standing there in awe. I was like, "Whoa, that is so cool!" Looking.
If it's not the original, it's like a replica of it. It looks just like it, which kind of reminds me of Iron Man 3 when
yeah.
Howard Stark is talking about. Like Howard Stark is basically Walt Disney in that movie.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, there was definitely some purposeful mirroring in those scenes.
Yes, absolutely. So Walt Disney Family Museum, highly recommend it. The exhibit is live right now at the Presidio in San Francisco. Hey, it's time to talk some Aladdin. Prince Ali, mighty as he, at the box office. Well, so here's the deal. We're not going to do a spoiler review, although, again, you've probably seen it already. I haven't. I'm going to go see it with my girlfriend when I arrive in South Carolina, and we're going to see it together. We made a pact not to see it until we saw it together, and I was like, okay, it doesn't look that great anyway. It's probably not going to be as good.
Finally, I'm the one that saw it first.
I know, right? What is happening?
Now I can spoil you. I have the power.
Uh-oh.
I mean, it's Aladdin, so really there's not spoilers.
I was going to say, yeah.
You've seen the animated one, so
yeah,
they didn't really change up too much. I don't know. Is that a spoiler?
Maybe. I don't know. So here's the before you jump in. It's been a sort of up and down rocky
marketing
campaign.
It's been off the air more probably than on the air.
That is true.
Because we've discussed a lot off the air. Because we never really got into some of the reactions to the trailers. I guess we did. We talked a little bit about Blue Genie versus not Blue Genie.
Yeah.
But we haven't talked about the sound, the clip of him singing
the infamous,
that came out that caused all the stir.
Yeah, here's the... Yeah, listen, we talked a lot... The spoiler at the end is... may not be as bad as some people were thinking, because like crap was talked.
Oh, there was a lot.
There was
online,
a lot of,
offline.
Aaron texting me. There
me
was
texting
like,
you. Yes.
Oh, man, you know this guy. He doesn't really. I remember Leslie way back. It's like, do we like Mina Masood? Does he really look the part? Or like, I don't know. Is it really necessary? Is this a cash grab? Oh, I don't know if this looks good. There's like, you know, Will Smith singing. Prince Ali. Okay, he still can't sing really well, but evidently it's
in that. Yeah, I have things to say. Yeah,
but it sounds. But give me your reaction that I received via text upon your first viewing, sir.
Well, I think my initial reaction was I said I loved it.
Okay,
and I think I said something about being wrong.
You did.
I don't know. Do you have the text? What did I say?
You know what? Let me pull it. Because what day did you see it? That's the real question.
I saw it on Saturday.
Yeah, here it is. First, you said, do you want to know before, as if like your opinion of it would spoil.
Some people think that that's a spoiler. Others' opinions is a spoiler. Like right now, people are probably
after
thinking it's a
spoiler. After me getting the Game of Thrones finale spoiled, I appreciate you treading carefully, all right? I commend
yes,
you, sir.
We will tread... Any comments I make about the movie, I will not spoil anything in the story.
Okay.
But I will give my reactions
and
how I felt about the movie
overall. Hilarious, because I've seen the movie. Like, I know what happens.
They do change some things.
Do they?
I will say that.
Oh,
they
can I ask you a very specific question right now? Otherwise, I'll forget.
Yeah.
Do they still have Slave Jasmine that's basically Slave Leia? Or is that... Because I remember seeing that and being like, oh, wow. Okay.
Do you think... Yeah, 12-year-old Aaron loved that part. do you think that in this day and age, in this climate, that they would have that in this movie?
Yeah, no. So okay. I'm going to say... Okay,
you're guessing correctly.
Okay, I figured. But all right, so here we go. It's... let's see... Here you go. You say, loved it. You need to see it so we can talk about it. So not only did you love it, it also inspired you to want to talk about the movie.
We're already talking about
it. Oh, sorry, I was talking over you.
So my big thing with my concern about the movie my trepidation was Will Smith.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had seen the Blue Genie thing and it was whatever. Is it bad CGI? Are they going to touch it up or whatever? And that wasn't the big concern for me. It was more the persona.
Like
that
wait for it. That part, right?
Yeah.
Not the ladies. I remember this clip coming out. And again, we haven't talked about it on the show, but man, Aaron was ticked off.
Well, I remember just thinking, am I just going to be watching Will Smith playing the Fresh Prince the entire time? You know, because I grew up with the Fresh Prince TV show. I loved that show when I was a kid. And, you know, so I was kind of like, I don't necessarily want to see him Fresh Prince Genie.
Yeah.
I want to see his take on the Genie. And so I was pretty concerned. But I'll just say right now, right away, first scene in the movie, all the trepidation went away. It was like Will Smith, he starts talking, I don't want to say too much about what happens right at the beginning, but basically he starts talking and then he's singing and I'm like, oh, actually, I'm already buying into this guy and I haven't even seen him as a genie yet. So I thought he did great throughout the entire movie. I was laughing at his jokes. I was into the persona. So I was buying into the shtick.
How much of the character is still reminiscent, like a rough percentage of Robin Williams' performance versus how much is the Will Smith hip hop persona? Because like he explicitly talked, like he was on Ellen talking about how I kind of embraced like a more hip hop side to the character. So like it sounds like that is a direction they were going.
Oh, definitely, and you can see it even in like Friend Like Me when they're singing it. He's got his flavor in there. He's doing his thing. But then they're also...
Man, what's your name? I've been listening to the soundtrack.
Oh, you've listened to the soundtrack?
Yes.
Okay, so you kind of already know.
Yeah.
But they do a lot of the Robin Williams jokes. They still do. Like, he pulls directly from the animated film, and they use some of those gags. Just like Will Smith's delivery is different, but they use some of the exact same jokes. So there is a lot of the, you know, I would see that as kind of a nice homage to him.
Yeah.
And not necessarily stealing from him. But I thought Will Smith did a great job of blending that character we knew from the animated film, but also adding his own flavor to it. And you quickly just get on board with it. He's so charming and funny, at least for me. Yeah. I was like, any doubts I had kind of went away. And I'll say this about that clip where we're all joking that he can't sing.
Yeah.
That's literally the worst clip they could have picked out of the whole movie.
Yeah.
Because everywhere else in the movie, that's the hardest note for him to hit, you know, when he sings that like real high, Prince Ali, you know, like that's, yeah. That's a hard note for him to hit. I don't know why they led with that clip, because everywhere else in the movie, he sings a lot. And
my
especially
theory is
at the beginning, he sounds fine. I wouldn't say he sounds amazing, but he definitely sounds good.
And my theory on that is they really liked the set design in that, because it looked like they put a lot of work in that number.
Yeah, they were trying to feature more of, you know, what was going on around him and not necessarily his voice, I think.
So short of Will Smith, because he sounds like he's the glue that holds the movie together. Maybe I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that's kind of what it sounds like you're saying.
I think he carries it, sure. Yeah, with his humor. And he's smooth and seamless in his delivery. You can tell he's the veteran actor of the crew.
So for who is it? Is it Mina Masood and
Naomi Scott.
Scott. In the trailers and stuff, to me, not to be unkind, but they seem a little bit like placeholders that sort of just perform the live action version of their characters. There doesn't seem to be as much of a unique take on them from the trailers. Is there like a twist to Aladdin or Jasmine or any other parts of the story? I think of like Beauty and the Beast, where they really inject, maybe Belle is a similar character, but they really like, they changed up some of the songs. They added the whole mother subplot, which really I feel like dynamically changed the movie and improved it, in my opinion. But like there was a lot of sort of tweaking of the script. Whereas I'm trying to think, same with Jungle Book when it came out. Is it a twist on Aladdin, or is Will Smith the main part that's different?
So I'll say mostly I was away from the narrative from the animated film than they did. They stuck pretty close to it.
Okay.
There are little details that they switched up on how things work, but for the most part, they stuck to it. The biggest changes, I would say, were going to be in the characters of Jafar and the characters of the Sultan. Those two characters are markedly different in the movie than the rest.
I wonder why. Anyway.
So Aladdin is pretty much, he's Aladdin. It's like the animated character popped off screen and, you know, became live action. I actually think that that's a good thing for Manim Sood. That he was able to kind of personify that. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
Naomi Scott was definitely a different version of Jasmine, but still I thought was playing pretty close to the character that we know. But, and then of course the animals, you know, you have in the animated film, you have Iago and Abu who have much more human-like characteristics.
Yeah.
In the live action, they stick to them being pretty much straight up animals without kind of the human persona.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
it's just to play like one or two clips, you have the much more like straight on performance of Arabian Nights, which is very similar to the original. Here we go. Take a listen.
Come on down, stop on by, hop a carpet and fly to another Arabian night.
I mean, it's Will Smith, but it's pretty true to the original.
You can hear Will Smith there, like kind of what I was saying. Like that's the first song that they play in the movie.
Yeah.
And right away, you're like, this is a much better kind of vocal than what we got in that clip. And kind of the scene that leads into him singing is really cool. So they really extend that song and add a lot of lyrics and verses to it that you don't get in the animated one.
Okay.
So the animated film only has like a really short, you know, one verse version of that song.
Yeah.
And they really extend that out all through kind of the opening credits.
One very controversial lyric in that song too, that I believe
in the animated one.
Yeah.
Yeah, they changed it up.
Yeah.
From the original soundtrack, I remember.
Because, like, the original, I think they changed it on like DVD re-releases. The one of the original lyrics was, "It's hey, it's barbaric, but hey, it's home." And I think they changed that. That's like one of the famous edits that Disney's made to their films to make it maybe a little more culturally sensitive.
Well, one of the lyrics that they got rid of was they'll cut off your ear if they don't like your face.
Yeah,
it's
or
barbaric,
maybe that. Yeah,
hey,
that's the
home.
One.
Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking of.
They changed it to something. Oh, what do they say now?
Yeah, but
I'm blanking
yeah.
now. I was just listening to it yesterday, but yeah, they changed it completely.
But and the idea of making it a little bit more culturally sensitive, and that's been in the marketing of the film too, where they've kind of really highlighted how they've sort of they want it to make it a sort of blend and celebration of different kinds of Eastern cultures and. That's really kind of honestly been a talking point of a lot of the interviews and stuff that I've seen for the film as well. Well, and so all of musical numbers, there's one new one. It's called Speechless.
And I can't cry, and I can't start to crumble.
This is where I'm getting nervous because I'm like, or was this in the original and I forgot? But I was just listening to the soundtrack for the first time. Okay. All right. Because you know me. That was very possible that I could have spaced on that. But like I was listening to the soundtrack on the road today that song, I was like, I don't remember. Speechless, which I actually liked it a lot. I thought it fit pretty well.
Yeah, it's a good addition. That's one because I don't have the nostalgia for it like I do with the other songs. It was probably my least favorite.
Sure.
But, you know, that'll take a few more listens to kind of get in my brain. But, yeah, I thought she did good for that in that song. And I actually had I had gone with my children, and I had one of my kids kind of had a little bit of an issue during the first part of that song, so I actually missed the first half of it.
Oh yeah, because it's the soundtrack has part one and part two. I assume they come
they
at
have,
different
yeah,
parts
they
of the film.
They come at different parts of the movie, and so when she did part one, I didn't even get to hear it, and then I got to hear the end.
Gotcha.
But then I went back and listened to it on the soundtrack.
Okay, nice. So it sounds like it belongs well in the lexicon of like, huh, it was pretty good. It's kind of what it sounds like if I were to summarize the Aaron Goins review.
Of the movie or the song?
The movie.
Oh, no. See, the thing is, I'm not a big fan of the live action movies, the idea of them in general. And I've kind of, they've been growing on me.
Yeah. They typically, when I hear you talking about an upcoming live action film, usually like, Aaron, when I'm talking to him on the phone, it's sort of like he's talking like it has something to prove.
Right. And it has to live up to, like Beauty and the Beast, I enjoyed watching the live action, but it doesn't even touch the original animated movie.
Yeah, and you're allowed to be wrong. It's okay.
Yeah, right. And a young person like you would be wrongly thinks the new one's better. But for Aladdin, I'll say this is the first time that I really loved this movie way more than I thought I was going to. Probably helped that I was going in with low expectations. And I feel like it stands beside the animated film in that I don't think it's better than an animated film, but it's its own thing, and I'm glad it exists. Yeah. And I can't wait to go see it again.
Look at that.
I've come around.
I will be seeing it this week,
and now I'm just waiting for Lion King.
I know. I will be circling back. I'll give my thoughts, maybe a few spoiler thoughts next show. But that is going to wrap up our thoughts on Aladdin.
Here it is! Prince Ali! People is why he got all cute and dropped by. With 60 elephants, hosts of all real bears and lions and brown men and more. What? 40 makers and boots and makers and boots of all black people. They play for Prince Ali.
Well, there have been a few stories this week that we want to touch on. Specifically, I know we talked briefly about the box off the film itself, but not only is the film well received in the Goins household, it seems to be well received at the box office. Again, I'm going to read the first sentence because one of my favorite pastimes in life, Aaron, is to read out loud dramatically the first sentence of box office news stories, because they are always the same. And wait for it. It's a whole new world of success for Disney's Aladdin.
Clever. It writes itself.
It's, wait, you know, this December it's going to be the rise of the box office for Skywalker. There's more
Skywalker
than Skywalker
rises at the box office.
Oh gosh, oh my god. Yeah, it's going to Lion King crowned top spot for weekend box office. Anyway, but
Disney
no.
Disney's live action film King of the Weekend.
Oh god. So yes, 200 million at the global box office this weekend, 100 million in North America, outperforming opening weekend projections. They had it projected at 75 to 85. It's 100 million. Aladdin's the third highest domestic film opening so far, behind, of course, Endgame and then Captain Marvel. Yeah, it's doing pretty hot. It's the general consensus. Last I looked at Rotten Tomatoes, it was, is it like 58-59%?
It was hovering right around fresh. It was getting, yeah. I think it started out right at 60 and then it kind of dropped a little.
Yeah, but the audience score seems to be up there, and people, I remember this, I'm trying to remember what the other live action, like Jungle Book, the critics loved. Yeah, I thought it was okay.
And Beauty and the Beast did well too. I think Beauty and the Beast was like in the 70% range. I don't remember Jungle Book, but I know it was high. So yeah. Traditionally these have done well with the critics.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up now. I'm just kind of curious. But so like critically not so hot, but that doesn't seem to be bothering them right now.
And I think that there's some of that, you know. Sometimes critics like to jump on a bandwagon, and it's like, well, am I supposed to like this or not? Am I going to look dumb if I say I like it? You know, because there had been all the criticism about Will Smith and the singing and the Blue Genie. And I think maybe some critics got a little shy on that. Sometimes I feel like there can be these waves of, you know, pressure, almost like this peer pressure in critics.
Yeah. It's a pretty homogenous group. And this has been the case for years, and it's not always reflective of what the public likes. A perfect example is the Hugh Jackman circus.
The Greatest Showman.
Greatest Showman, panned by critics,
people love that movie,
and it kind of impacted the box office at first. Its first week or two weren't great, but like word of mouth was insanely good. I read this whole piece that kind of broke down how amazing word of mouth was for the success of The Greatest Showman at the box office. So it's just one of those things that who knows, maybe Aladdin will have a little bit more legs too, as word of mouth maybe helps it out more than say the critics per se. Beauty and the Beast 71%, so it's on the low end of these films, but I don't know, it'll be interesting to see what the reception is, and we'll see. And you know, Aladdin is what comes out right off of its heels, so it kind of sets up the narrative a little bit, where Lion King can be the Lion King can sort of be the bounce back. At least from the critical perspective. Although, if this film really tanked, that kind of puts a lot of pressure on Lion King. So, who knows? We'll see where things go from there.
Well, I think financially this movie is going to do fine. It seems like it already is doing well. And I think word of mouth is going to help it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Aladdin is Aladdin. There's certain movies in the Disney lexicon that are just going to make money. And, you know, if you're looking at kind of those original golden era Disney movies, you're thinking, you know, Little Mermaid, Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, you know, those in that era, and they're going to make live action for all of them. All of those movies are going to do well at the box office off of nostalgia. And every parent that grew up with that stuff, their kids have been watching it for the past however many years too, because that's what you have in your library. So my kids know Aladdin better, if not, you know, just as much, if not better than I do, because they've been watching it, even though they weren't anywhere near being born when that movie came out.
Yeah, that's
so
very true.
You have the audience like me, the guys who grew up with it, and then you have every other kid between now and then that has also been watching it. So these movies are just going to do so well. And I think Lion King is going to crush the box office.
You think so? Yeah.
I think so. I think
all
it
has to be
is
good. All it has to be is a good, faithful adaptation, and it'll go nuts. Yeah.
If a Will Smith-led Aladdin can do well at the box office, Lion King's going to crush it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a it's such an amazing cast, too, for Lion King. Like, that's one thing that I've always thought about Lion King has in, as an advantage over Aladdin, is that the whole cast is just looks great.
Right.
I mean, like, who doesn't want to see John Oliver as Zazu? Right?
That's the one you went to?
That's the one I went to. Well, I mean, also Darth Vader's in it still. But, you know, I love also how that's like, We're all this amazing recasting for everybody except James Earl Jones. You can't do that. So,
yeah, that was a smart move, though.
Yeah.
Smart move.
Hey, it wouldn't be a Mouse and Castle episode if we didn't mention Galaxy's Edge.
Oh, man, it's so close.
We have the guide map was released.
It's everywhere now.
It's everywhere. There's just this press event. We weren't at it.
No.
For, I know.
We declined, you know.
We're busy, you know. And you don't want to just say yes the first time, right?
We want to experience it with the rest of the masses.
That's
you know?
Right. You know, we're not it's too good for
access.
You. That's right. That's right.
These maps, they had the Disney Play app,
yeah.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is going to have all the cool stuff for Galaxy's Edge, but that's for another time to talk about. But they had released kind of, that was the first place that they showed the map, kind of their version of the map. But then within the past week, now we've seen the map show up on the Disneyland website. It's the actual printed maps have been released, how it's going to look there. So now we can get a really good view of the layout that's not kind of – because in the Disney Play app, it's a little bit skewed to look fun. But now we can actually see the true layout and kind of see where everything's at and where what everything's called. So if you want to go to Oga's Cantina, we know exactly where it's at now. We can map our path out when we go there to know exactly where to go.
I'm looking at the blown up image right now of the guide map version, and it's pretty cool. Like, it has a list of the dining locations and so you can kind of compare where Ronto Roasters is versus Docking Bay 7 Food and Cargo versus Aga's Cantina versus the Milk Stand. And a lot of this helps me because we've talked about this so much that I have a general idea of what's in the park, but I don't really have a spatial idea of where it is. You can see, like, way off in the corner where the Rise of Resistance is at the gun emplacement, which is
Are they sweet. Listing it yet?
It just says, 19, Rise of the Resistance opens later this year.
Oh, okay.
21 Savvy's Workshop.
Nice. It looks so big.
That's
and there's a lot of stuff out there now. So many people have gone through these preview events that pretty much the whole experience has been experienced.
Yeah.
And so if you want to find a YouTube video of somebody who's taking apart the lightsaber they built, you can find that.
Yeah.
You know, if you
they
want to know everything that you can purchase.
Even at the press previews, no cell phones or cameras were allowed in the park. So the only photography has been just official releases so far. But man, starting May 31st, coming up in a few days, dang. This weekend.
This weekend is the first.
The masses will be there. It'll be in all the social media. And
they're doing a preview, or they're doing a grand opening online.
Oh, yeah?
That you can watch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so Disney Parks blog is streaming it live. I believe that's tomorrow.
Dang.
So that's something to look out for if
that's,
you want to
yeah,
see
today,
the official opening ceremony.
Yeah, as you're listening to this, that's probably today, so you can do that. We'll
yeah, if we get this out in time.
I know, right? It's and of course our trip's coming up in a mere 2 weeks and some change. Reservations are made, plans have been made, flights are booked. It's happening, man.
Yes, now I just have to decide if I want to wait 2 hours and spend $200 to get a lightsaber.
Are you? Serious question. Are you actually going to spend $200?
I'm tempted, man. I've seen a lot. Like, I actually did. I kind of wanted to go in unspoiled, but I fell to the temptation to watch a YouTube video of a guy who bought one.
Oh, God.
And him kind of disassembling it, and there's a kyber crystal thing, and I'm like, oh, my goodness, it looks so cool.
Yeah.
It's way cooler than any toy lightsaber, replica lightsaber I've ever seen.
Dude. Yeah.
So
I mean, it looks amazing. I won't do it because I'm kind of strapped for cash. All of my travel money has been spent, so it'll be just... I'll take lots of pictures, and you'll see them on our Instagram, @MouseAndCastle, which you should follow right now if you do not. It's the best way to keep up with the show in between shows. Well, I would almost say a second best way, because if you want a our personalized weekly newsletter, except not this last week because Riley was moving, but this weekend I'll be putting a new one out. It's bit.ly/mouseandcastle. Sign up for our weekly newsletter. The stories in between the show, Aaron's hot take. What was your hot take on Aladdin? I'm trying to remember. It was really funny.
Was it the one about Fresh Prince? The comparison to Fresh Prince? Banks family was on vacation at Disney World and Will fell asleep and had a dream that he was the genie.
Yep, that was it. That was the one. So if you want Aaron's hot take on trending Disney stories, we'll have them in our newsletter. We curate some of the top stories, give our comments, post some photos, and just stay in touch with us. And especially when we put out new shows. We send the links in that weekly newsletter. So subscribe to the newsletter. It's super easy. It's just bit.ly/mouseandcastle, bit.ly/mouseandcastle. And we appreciate everyone who's already signed up. It's a little bit of a crew you guys have going on. So another one comes out this weekend. Make sure you sign up. mouseandcastle@gmail.com. That's where you can email us. And facebook.com/mouseandcastle. The link to all the stories we've talked about this week can be found at mouseandcastlepodcast.com. For episode 18, we'll have, if you want to see the pictures and links to everything we've talked about, it's right there, mouseandcastlepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, may your wishes come true, be they three or many.
That's why you could have rhymed it.
See when I did that? That wasn't bad, right? We'll take it.
For you and me.
Dude, that's a show.
All right.
Not bad for after 600 miles.
No.
And I would drive 600. Oh, man. I'm so tired.